I would like the ship to go. Now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. Today, we're here to talk about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, Whistle Speak. And, of course, I'm your host, Clarence, and I'm joined by none other than returning guest, Tasha from After the Snap. How are you doing, Tasha?
I'm well. Glad to be here with you guys today.
Glad to have you. Can't wait for insight. And also on the podcast, of course, as always, we have the Who's Storying himself, Mr. Jones. How are you doing today, Cal?
So you know what? I'm going to start by being a little bit argumentative tonight and say, Clarence Brown, you're wrong. You want to know how you're wrong? Tasha is so often in the chat that she may be with us live, but she's just joining us via another medium.
We have her on the videos, is
there
what
you're saying. but all jokes aside, as always, glad to be here. And yes, very glad to have Tasha back because, Tasha, you and I have a habit of agreeing with each other. So maybe yes. We can gang up on Clarence tonight. What do you say?
I'm all for it. No, I'm not. That's my pod brother. Let me not be mean.
Do what you do. Do what you do. Of course, we have Brittany in the chat. We have Marge. We have Wingrace and Will Lodify in the chat as well. Tasha, before we move on, will you tell people where they can find you and what do you do on your YouTube channel?
Man, I just keep evolving. I'm doing things. But I am the host of After the Snap Movies and TV. You can find me on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube. I would prefer that you go ahead and look for me on YouTube. After the Snap Movies and TV, we talk about Star Trek. We talk about X-Men. We talk about movies. We talk about TV. And I'm inviting everybody. Yeah, it's a party. Everybody can come.
Open a channel to all decks.
Before we get into our review of Whistle Speak, we want to just cover a few news items really quickly. We have the ongoing saga of the Paramount Plus sale, which may never happen. It's been going back and forth. One minute I'm hearing the Apollo management group and Sony. One minute I'm hearing the Skydance. Tasha, help us out. Where do we fall in this sale? Will it happen?
I got a strong feeling it's going to have to happen because of the changes that we're seeing, the restructuring we're seeing of Paramount Global's, upper management or CEOs mm-hmm. and all of that. But the who is the big question. And I'm still crossing my fingers that it's Skydance. It looks like James Cameron and his name? Ari Emanuel. James Cameron are Team Tasha on this. They want to see it go into the hands of Skydance because Skydance has already done some outstanding work with Paramount on Star Trek. And I'm a little selfish, so I'm going to look out for the Star Trek interests. But right now, it's all up in the air. The second most popular option would be Sony. And Sony, it would do Sony well because Sony has stayed out of streaming. But that would give Sony a place to land all of their streaming stuff.
So all I can say is we need to worry. And they're not in a good shape where I'm about to go either. But if we have David Zaslav or whatever his name is that's over Max now, mm-hmm. coming after Paramount, then you might as well say Star Trek nothing because he'll just shelve it and take a tax write-off or whatever.
Oh, and he's notorious for that, isn't he?
Yes.
They shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's ultimately what we have to look at. Like, as far as it concerns Star Trek, like, what is going to happen to it? Of course, Discovery is ending, but we still have Strange New Worlds. We know Lower Decks is ending. Proposed Star Trek Academy show coming. A Section 31 movie as well. So you just got to think, have they been ramping down over the last year in order to do something different as they make the sale? I don't know. It just seems kind of strange that these shows are ending like this and then we're going to sell the company. And again, what does that mean for Star Trek?
You know, Star Trek, I think is right now, I think it's too big to fail. And meaning that it would be wrong to pull the plug completely on anything Star Trek, but to slow productions down, I think that's not out of the realm of possibility. And it's not a bad idea if you're in as bad shape as you say you're in, you know. So,
thanks. All right. But if you look at it, you know, let's take out of what's happening right now and looking at the bigger picture of intellectual property. And Tasha, you mentioned on your channel that you talk other things like X-Men. Let's use X-Men really quick as an example. Mm-hmm. Back in the 90s, Marvel Comics themselves, when the implosion after the big boom of the 90s happened, Marvel was trying to stave off bankruptcy. So one of the ways they did that was taking that intellectual property and licensing it, Spider-Man to Sony, X-Men, Fantastic Four to Fox, you know, years and years before MCU ever came along. Now, does that mean at some point that the powers that be that own Paramount at some point take the intellectual property that Star Trek and license it out to fill in the blank? I mean, in a way, we've seen that happen recently with Doctor Who, with the BBC licensed to Bad Wolf Studios and in turn licensing deal for distribution to Disney Plus. So is this just an evolution of medium overall, not necessarily Star Trek?
Well, I look at it like that the sale, the all of that MCU stuff with the X-Men going one way, Spider-Man going another place, Incredible Hulk over here, I think that serves as a cautionary tale because they had no idea how many billions of dollars were being left on the table when they sent all those little properties. I think it was what, $7 million to Sony? That's an insane discount for Spider-Man. And I think they would have to keep something like that in mind when you're talking about something as big as Star Trek.
While I 100% agree with you, at the end of the day, as we were talking about the shelving of properties for tax write-offs, if they're looking at it, how are we going to sustain ourselves for the next 3 to 6 months as an entity, that property loses value as opposed to that paycheck in the bank.
Yeah, I can see the value of it starts, you know, with this is more valuable away. But I'm like this. If you got to sell Star Trek, sell it all in its completion. Do not sell bits and pieces. We don't want Prodigy in one place and Strange New World somewhere else. And, you know, if you're going to sell it all to somebody who wants the business of running Star Trek. And I think Skydance, it would be perfect for this.
Yeah, at the very least, I could definitely see them splitting up the movie and the TV verse again. That is a strong possibility. But I have to say that the Sony deal definitely worries me. We know what Sony has brought Spider-Man up and brought him back down and brought him back up. It's kind of all over the place with that. And not even
what, you mean you didn't like Mobius?
Yeah, the ancillary, all the B characters they're bringing in, or C or D characters, one might say, and trying to make movies out of them. So Sony is so hit or miss, but they've done some gems. Their animated stuff with Spider-Man has been amazing, pun intended. But so I don't know what's so hit or miss with Sony, man.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers that it goes to somebody who cares about the property. And, you know, there are other things I like on Paramount Plus. Don't get me wrong, but Star Trek is my baby. And if you're going to do it, we got to do it right.
A long time ago in a federation far, far away. Star Trek Wars from Disney.
Oh, God. Well, let's move to our next story, our last story, I would say, is William Shatner seems to be open to returning to Star Trek as a de-aged Captain Kirk. Thoughts on the 93-year-old William Shatner returning?
I feel like unless they de-age that voice too, because we saw it in Picard. We had young-looking Picard with old man Picard voice. So if they're not going to change the voice too, we're going to be able to tell that William Shatner is damn near 100 years old. And while it would be a big win for the fans who are all about the nostalgia, I think this is a horse that we've beaten enough.
Taking AI where AI has never gone before.
In fact, he's all AI because he can't play any part of the role. Yeah, in this article, Shatner shared that it's an intriguing idea. It's almost impossible, but it would be a great role. And if so, well written, I would be open to returning. And he also says that if there was a genuine reason for the character appearing, I would consider it. So, you know, he might just be blowing us a bunch of smoke.
I think these men at this age, they gonna take these paychecks. It's the same way I thought about Patrick Stewart when he came back for Picard. I'm like, yeah, that's a blank check pretty much.
Lawrence! And of course, sorry, I had to do it.
Yeah, they gotta get paid. Those young women that they keep on their payroll—I mean, not on their payroll, their wives and girlfriends.
yeah.
They gotta look after them.
Yeah, I'll take some Paramount books. I'll take some.
I would too.
And finally, I would be remiss if I didn't wish Ryan Hart, Larry Irby, happy birthday. It's his birthday today. That's why he's not here, because he's out
happy celebrating his birthday.
So we'll raise a glass to you, sir. Happy birthday.
He finally turned 21.
Oh, yeah, wow. So young. Pick up a comment real quick here from Wynn Grace. He's saying that I, for one, am excited for a Madam Web and Arachnia Queen of the Spider People from the Captain Proton crossover. Yes. Bring Kate Mulgrew back. I'm ready for that. And here's Reinhardt saying, people thought that David Zaslav was some kind of savior when he came to the WB. They're not saying that anymore. Yes.
I was people.
Tasha, come on.
I honestly thought that the man had a plan. And yeah, his plan is to make a bunch of movies and then pull the plug on them before we could see them, you know. So,
can we make a movie of that? Let's try. And on a shoestring budget to boot. Right. All right, guys. Well, are we ready to go ahead and get into this episode?
Can I mention one more thing that I forgot to tell you?
Yes, ma'am. Let's do it.
Michelle Yeoh got the Medal of Freedom.
Yes. Oh, happy day.
I forgot all of this stuff on my own stream, so I had to bring it up here.
Yeah, funny enough, I was watching it on YouTube, and my girlfriend was like, is Michelle Yeoh your new hall pass? I'm like, no, I just love her presence. I just want to be in her, vicinity. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was so awesome to see her and be in the White House.
I just love that lady.
Yes. <I do. laughs> Yeah, she's so great. So great, man. I love Michelle Yeoh.
You know, there's just some actors, and this is, you know, male, female, either way, actor, that just come across as very dignified and graceful. She's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Very distinguished.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, and with that, we'll go ahead and get into our review of Whistlespeak. Again, that's a season 5, episode 6. While undercover in a pre-warp society, Captain Burnham is forced to consider breaking the Prime Directive when a local tradition threatens Tilly's life. Meanwhile, Culber tries to connect with Stamets, and Adira steps up when Raynor assigns them to a position on the bridge. The episode is written by Kenneth Land and Brandon Schultz and directed by Chris Byrne.
Alrighty, so for everyone listening, if you have not seen this episode, put us on pause, go out, watch the episode, come back, because from this moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle station.
What gives you the right?
You cannot destroy an idea.
At ease, please, Brandon.
No, let them spoil them all.
The spoiler warning has been dropped, and as always, we are back to review the episode, and we're going to go straight to Cal for the beats of the episode. As always, sometimes serious, sometimes comedic. Quite frankly, you never know. Mr. Jones, what do you have for us this week, sir?
So I tried really, really hard this week to try to come up with something clever so that I could somehow ask a question and end it with an answer that says, hellum no. But I really couldn't, so I'm just going to say that and let that be my beats.
Podcast over, guys.
Yeah, well, no.
I wanted to say, did I like this episode really, really much? Hell no.
So. How dare you? How dare you, sir? Oh, all right, Tasha, if you'll go ahead and give your high-level thoughts of the episode.
This episode was classic Star Trek. So if you are a fan of the things that we saw in classic Star Trek, this thing is for you. I did have a nitpick. I think many of you people in our chat know what my nitpick was, but for the most part, it's a stellar classic episode.
I think people, viewers, fans, whoever, can look in the future at this episode and kind of taking on what Tasha just said. It is classic Star Trek. It is a good example, I think, that is going to age well. Knowing that there are only 10 episodes, I didn't enjoy it because of that fact. Because I wanted not a classic Star Trek episode. I wanted to be wowed and I wanted to, you know, have a little bit more than what I got. But again, in the future, people looking back and say, what's one of the greatest episodes of Discovery? This may be pulled out as being one of those because of those elements. Just in the context here, I'm not quite so sure. What did you think?
I like the fact that this episode was slower. It was, to me, it's the calm before the storm. I feel like we finna hit it heavy in these last few episodes. And this was a moment to step back, you know, slow the pace just a little bit. Let's have a classic style episode. To me, this felt like a Strange New Worlds episode. Or, you know, as many people have alluded already, it could have been in any other series. And it does some great things with the questions we ask ourselves in life. And, you know, technology versus religion. I always go back to that season 2 Discovery episode when Captain Pike is talking about how his religion plays upon him and how it can, you know, any advanced technology, you know, that whole thing about how it can seem like a god. So I really like towing that line in this episode. And there was a lot of, if you're taking Culber into account as well, there was a lot of spiritual elements going on. So I think I think I enjoyed it. Yeah. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about Culber and his AI therapist grandmother Mufango conversation. Now, I really like this because unlike other shows, you know, I think I mentioned the Tuvok when Tuvok was going through Punfar on Voyager. But unlike those episodes that I can recall off the top of my head, this one was a little bit different because the Hollow was created from Culber's neural patterns or his memories. Somehow they were able to read it and create the character. So I thought that was very, very interesting. What are you guys' thoughts on the interaction Culber had with his grandmother as he searches for his spirituality?
I liked the fact that we are meeting somebody from his past because it's really hard to do when you've been thrust almost 1,000 years into the future. But then at the same time, we've seen these holographic characters be reproduced before. So I was like, okay, so what makes this one different? And it's what you said. It was based, this one is so true to his memories that he's almost like, this is her. This is Abuela right here. This is not just a hologram because she is literally exactly what I remember. So that's, I like that.
Yeah, and it was interesting when she couldn't answer a question. He was like, "What? We've had this conversation before. You should be able to answer it." So it's a slightly different twist on that whole thing, but I liked what they did there.
So for the premise, you know, I was thinking while I was watching it, two things. Number one, the person you're seeing is not really, of course, your grandmother. It is an idealized interpretation because if it's coming from your memories, you're not seeing the real person. You're seeing how your perception filter has given this often larger than life representation to that person, whether it's the grandmother, whether it's an uncle, whether it's a friend, whether whomever, love interest, whatever you want to say, it's an idealized thought representation, memory representation. Now, the other thing I was thinking of, kind of being a little bit morbid, is that could go in an unsettling, sad kind of way, because if you're seeing someone who has passed, and for all intents and purposes for him, he's in the future. There, she's long gone. You know, there's no, unless you go back in the past, seeing her again, I could see where that could be comforting, but also being unsettling and disheartening and whatever other negative words you want to throw in there could be. So I guess it's, you need to be in the right frame of mind to use that technology, in my opinion.
Yeah, I really like that as he was battling the spirituality part of it, she like, you know, we follow science too, like follow the science end of it. And of course, that leads to him doing the neural scan, getting Stamets to help. And Tasha, you pointed this out on your stream. I thought Stamets was being a jerk.
See, like, I read it entirely different. I thought he was being supportive.
I did too.
You did too?
Okay, it was me then.
Because you got to remember, Stamets is a jerk. That is the, no, really, and I'm not trying to be funny, but that is the core of the character. We even saw that highlighted in Meta Sense a couple of episodes ago when they were referring to him playing how jerky he was at the beginning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just like, he was like, get over it. Have fun with it. You know, it was a very Stamets answer. So he wasn't like not being himself by saying that answer. But still, I think Culber was wanting a little bit more. He was wanting a little bit more. And to me, that's the reason he ends up, you know, after he gives Book the advice to just chill, bro. To me, that's why he went to him at the end. He was like, you know, maybe we can connect on this level. We're both going through something. Let's connect. Because it does seem to a certain extent that Stamets lacks the capacity to be emotional, which I understand. So I think Culber still was searching for an answer by talking to Book at the end.
And see, that's one of the things, I guess, me sitting back and looking at Stamets and Culber, Stamets usually will have some type of answer. If you got a question or if you got a problem, Stamets will be the person who is going to try to dissect things. But once he realized that this is outside of the realm of my expertise, you're talking spirituality, I'm just going to tell you to have fun. So I can see how it could be dismissive, you know?
Let's dive into Book a little bit. I guess there's not a whole lot to say here other than he couldn't do anything. He had to sit on his hands and he chose to play video games. Okay, let's check that.
Very man thing to do.
But I like that, actually. I like the fact that he wasn't on the planet on the away mission just because they wanted to put him and Michael together. You know, he was doing his own thing that had absolutely nothing to do with her. So as far as character development for him, and I like the fact that you had him and Hugh having the conversations that they did, because why not? Why can't they be friends? You know, so I like that.
Yeah, and the other one of those no side stories, we had Adira, where she is feeling like, oh my God, I let the time bug or time spider onto the ship. I've messed up. And they, excuse me, I might have said they are, you know, not feeling confident about themselves. But I love, boy, Rainer, man, that guy. I'm starting to really love that dude. He's like, hey, you asked me here. I put you here because I thought you could do the job. Come on now. Mm-hmm. So Rainer is hitting on all cylinders. And I love that he's given them a little bit of confidence to do the job just a little bit better.
Because if Rainer says, I put you here because I figure you can do the job, he's not blowing smoke.
No.
You know, he doesn't have that connection to her to try to stroke her ego. Or their ego. I'm sorry. He's not trying to stroke their ego. He is telling them, this is how I see you. No matter what you see yourself as, I see you as capable. So get your capable butt up here and do the job. You know,
Let's talk about the, you know, let's try to go sequentially from here on out. Let's talk about the part of the episode when Burnham goes to meet, oh man, what's the dude's name? I can never remember his name. The guy with the glasses. Kovic. Why can I never? Kovic. She goes to meet Kovic in the secret white room. And any thoughts on Kovic here? Because this dude is so retro. It's almost just unfathomable at this point.
So I have a question. So let me answer your question with a question. Is Kovic more than what we realize?
I think he has to be. He's a man out of his time. Certainly. And as Marge says here, Mr. Legal Pat, he's a man out of his time. He's sitting there with this desk. I remember when that desk came out, I saw a bunch of YouTubers reviewing it. That desk, he has legal pad, he has a suit and tie, he has the glasses. When I think it was you, Tasha, mentioned that they don't even need glasses in this far-flung future. So what is going on with COVID? We've been asking this question from the beginning. I don't know.
So is he going to tie into this finale? You know, they're looking for this progenitor's tech. And this is actually what I thought. So I'm not trying to filter this through Doctor Who, but there was something called, and I won't say what it was, but there was a device called the Moment that had an interface that looked like a person. So who's to say that whatever this tech isn't some type of tech that has a human interface? And they've been actually, with him, dealing with this progenitor's weapon or technology all along, and he's judging, this is the final step, and he's judging people toward the end. I know that's far-fetched, but who knows?
I think anything is, right now, anything is on the table, because we have so little to go on. The way I surmise is that he is from the 21st century. Everything that about him is so connected to our time. It makes me feel like you said, he's a man out of time, but he's there for a reason. He's in the 31st century for a reason. Or is it 32nd? I can't remember. He's in that century for a reason. But he's home to the 21st century for some reason.
Yeah. What's the assignment, Earth? People that we count.
Seven.
We talk. Yeah, I can't remember the name of the actual group of people.
But no, I can't.
Yeah, they're in Picard season two as well. Season two as well. But I can see them being a part of those people.
The Geary Seven folks.
But yeah, let's. Let me mention that we do get some good. Well, let's pick up Wingrace's comment here, and then we'll move on. Kovach is an interesting character. I would personally love it if he was like one of the main soldiers during the Temporal War. There's a backstory there. I just hope we get to hear it. Yeah, I kind of feel like we might get to hear it in books later, maybe. Because, man, it just doesn't seem like we're gonna get to it. Oh, supervisors. Thank you, Wingrace. Mm-hmm. Supervisors. And then Dreamwalker mentions maybe Kovach is Lanthanite. Now, help me out. Where do we see the Lanthanites?
Strange New Worlds. What is her name? The new character in Strange New Worlds. Old as Dirt.
Pelly. I can see that. I can see that. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that does sound.
But also, Kovach gives us, somehow he's able to obtain a list of all of the scientists, the full roster of the scientists. Of course, we have Velik, the Romulan, which we learned about in the Red Directive. We have Janal Bix, Carmen Cho, the Terran, which we learn about in Mirrors, and Hitoshi Krill, the Denobulan, we learn about in this episode. Now, I found it funny that the last name is Marina Drex. Is it Derex? I think it's Derex. Marina Derex, which is Betazoid. And, you know, I think that's an obvious shout out to Rena Certes there. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. So what I loved about this episode, just off the jump, was seeing, you know, last week I talked about how Rayner could give a crap about how stuff works and science and all that stuff. Just make it happen. Mm-hmm. We get to see Burnham go back to her roots a little bit in this episode. She points out, you know, some of the culture of the people, talking about, you know, we have these three different genders, and she's just into it. She's loving diving back into this culture, her xenoanthropology. Am I wrong? Did Tilly kind of recruit her a little bit to come to Starfleet Academy?
Yes.
What was that about?
Yes. So let me ask this. I'm beginning to wonder, and this is another theory, far-fetched theory here. I'm beginning to wonder if by the end of this season that Rayner is the captain of the Discovery and our crew all go off on their separate things, because looking more and more and more of that bridge crew aren't there.
Mm.
You know, we're seeing faces that we've seen this season, but they're going off and doing their own things. Who's to say you won't see Stamets and you go off, do their own thing, take Adira with them. You see Tilly recruit Burnham. So Saru missing in action 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. So are you saying that to say that they may be trying to transition some of the characters to this Starfleet Academy show, or
maybe, or maybe at least explain, you know, why at the end she's not the captain?
Which is even more interesting because they didn't know this would be the last season they shot it. So,
Well, they shot all that extra some of it. Yeah.
Close out the story too. So,
and who's to say that recruiting drive wasn't extra footage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could have been. It certainly could have been.
I thought about Michael going to Starfleet Academy, but you know, I never even went that next logical step and said the rest of them may go too, because all they know in this time is one another. Even though they may have made friends or whatever throughout this this couple of years that they've been in this century, they are family. That's all they know is each other. So if two or three of them left, all of them would leave. It could happen.
Yeah, it seems like a natural transition, actually. Mm-hmm. I want to come in real quick. Cal mentioned that some of the bridge crew, Owo and Detmer, are still hauling. I guess they're still hauling the ship back to Federation or Starfleet headquarters. But it may have been Windgrace that mentioned it on his review. Like, it is funny how they're just like never there. but yeah, I need my crew back. I need my crew back. Let's talk about Helimno, or Hell No, as Cal says it. What do we think about this whistle speak? Any thoughts? Because to me, it felt like a good introduction to get us into these people on the planet. But after that, to me, it really had no bearing on the people at all. Did you guys feel that way as well?
Yeah, I was like, well, why did we call this whistle speak instead of something more centered around their religion or those water towers or something? Because we only used the whistle speak in that one little sequence, it seemed.
Thoughts, Cal?
Well, what I want to know is, what did they call each other? Was it campers or
compeers?
Yes, that irritated the bleep out of me. That was so freaking corny. That was just something about that. I was like, did somebody just Google give me an irritating name and use it? That irritated me.
Of all the things you can pick out, Cal, the compeers is what.
That, see, even hearing you say it is like, ow.
So, Kyle, you had a word, and I just went on a whole ideological, theological rant on my.
And I had a word.
You had a word, though. Yeah, because that's what bothered me. That the only thing that bothered me about those people is it wasn't even them. It was the. Oh, why is it so hard to say two words that have that syllable? The noble. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I never say it right. So we find it that now you messed me up.
The Denobulan.
We find that Hitoshi Creel was actually a part of building these weather towers on the planet, because the planet is just now, I guess, after many, many years, it became a drier planet, and they needed these towers to actually sustain life, because on Denobula, that's kind of their thing. That's what they've done to sustain life on their planet, which I did not know. But yeah, interesting here. We have one of our scientists coming here, and he chooses to leave one of the pieces to the puzzle here. And to figure out that piece of the puzzle, we have to get to one of these towers. I really like the world building that they put into this episode, because a lot of things they did not have to do. But I think the extent of world building, I like the sound medicine at the very beginning, I thought was interesting. And just getting into this almost like a religious journey or trek to actually what we find out is sacrificing yourself at the tower. What did you guys think about how that was actually conveyed in the episode? This religious trek. Blind religion, as I might call it.
You say, you know, I got feelings about just indoctrination like this, and I'm not going to veer off into it, but I am going to say as about the Denobulans. I said it right. The Denobulans, came to this planet 800 years ago, set up five towers to keep the planet going. But with technology, you know that there's maintenance.
Yes.
There's upkeep. And you mean to tell me you never came back to check on the towers? You never came back to see that these people were still living? And now that the only group that's left is the one closest to this tower, you basically let a civilization thrive and then left it to die.
Yeah, this
that's
is
what
one,
I did like.
One tower left. One tower left.
Yep.
And again, like the sufficiently advanced technology thing, they have built their whole lives around this thing. You know, they think they have to pray to it and sacrifice. We find out sacrifice to this tower or their god through this tower in order to get rain. And,
so I've got
and
a
this
response.
How that has shaped their entire people.
Go ahead, I got Kyle. A response real quick to Tasha. The burn. Could it be that's the explanation of why they've not returned to maintain? They didn't have the ability to get back. Now,
was that only like 200 years, maybe?
So true. But who's to say?
Years, we could
but who's to say those
people.
200 years, those other four didn't collapse in 200 years?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
But to me, you should have took your butts back there, the Denobulans, Phlox and them, and helped them, taught them how to maintain the towers instead of just leaving them there and like, we'll come back and fix them if something happens. Because now you got people worshiping towers, you know, and that's never any good.
Oh, man, I have to pick up a comment. Dreamwalker said that, you know, I'm sure they misfiled their paperwork somewhere. Phlox and them. and I want to pick up Wig Grace's comment where he's saying that the compeer thing struck me like that Voyager episode where Chakotay and everyone talked really strangely. Glimpsing, I think is what they use in that episode. Yeah, all the Chakotay stuff was really kind of interesting in Voyager. I don't know if it was appropriated badly. Do we look back on that stuff, the Akuchimoya? Do we look back on that as being like kind of badly or distastefully done? Oh, I don't know. But it was always kind of weird to me
horrible.
At the time.
Because there was a guy who said that he was part of some tribe and that he was the person who was supposed to be like their answer man on set. And come to find out he was lying. He wasn't even Native American.
Are you serious?
Oh, wow.
Everything that they thought they were doing right was just some stuff that he had made up.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was getting those checks, man.
Yeah. We said about Paramount checks.
and Marge is saying that one is Nemesis. Oh, the episode name. Cool. Cool. So I got to go back and check that one out. Nemesis. Good stuff. But yeah, I just found all the religious stuff, the journey I thought was really interesting. You know, it's something kind of cruel where you have to take this journey and they make you take this pill that makes you ultra thirsty. And oh, lo and behold, this is going to be like the New York Marathon. We're going to put water stations all on the journey. But don't you drink it. Don't you drink it. Yeah, so they really thought some of this stuff through that I, you know, just thought was interesting. Kyle, what do you think about that last little bit where we see the finish line and they give you the bucket or the bowl of water to hold in front of your face as you scurry across the finish line? Too cruel. Thoughts? What do you think?
Yeah. Honestly, I was kind of tuned out at that point a little bit. I mean, I'm just really being honest because I was sitting there getting kind of irritated, thinking we need to be seeing more. I've only got four more episodes. So I was kind of getting irritated at that point. Mm. Now, one thing I did like about that was the use of Tilly. You know, yeah. I think they very smartly used her this season. And I like, and I hope I'm not jumping too far, but I love in the context of the bigger picture of this, the way she's overhearing the revelation of what this means. And yeah. She doesn't say anything, but it's the eye gestures and the look she does. She says so much without saying anything. And I really love how she did that.
Yeah, I think Tilly had it pretty hard in this episode when you consider that she thought she was helping this kid, Rava. Mm-hmm. And she was actually bringing her to her death. That has to be a hard one. Now, Mary Wiseman was fabulous in this episode, mm-hmm. as you say, Kyle.
I spent so much time thinking that that was Adira. Like, as we were heading into the season and we saw the stills of a scene from this episode, I thought it was Tilly and Adira, but it was Tilly and someone completely different. And yes, Tilly got an opportunity to shine in this episode. It is not so much because of all the stuff that she knows, it's because of what she didn't know in this situation. And she was being so uplifting to this person, only to find out that once we get inside of this tower, neither one of us are supposed to be walking out. And that's crazy to me. Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy that, is it Avis? Avas? Mm-hmm. That Avas would, of course, he's a grown I don't know how to say it when it's they are grown, mm-hmm. and he is letting them do as they want to do. But yes, it's crazy that, you know, they're going to their death and the fathers allow it. The father is some sort of religious figure there, and he's just, you know, he doesn't want it to happen. But if that's what they want to do, he is allowing them to do it. And, you know, you talked about on your stream, Tasha, but just the complexity of what they're doing versus the truth and how that is what that has meant to their people for so long. And just the notion of that crumbling, mm-hmm. you know, your belief structure crumbling. Avas just does not know what to do.
There's always not always. But there comes a point in a lot of people's life where that cognitive dissonance starts to set in and you start believing something outside of what has been instilled in you. We saw that with the one lady who was speaking to Burnham, where she was like, no, you ain't got to go to that tower, right?
Yeah, now, she was
in
great.
That moment, I thought, is she the Satan character? Is she the person that's like, you ain't got to do it that way, girl. If you do it this way, it's still going to be the same. But no, she was actually telling the truth. Like, she had figured out in her mind that the rain gonna come whether these people sacrifice themselves or not. So I'm gonna tell a few people who I think will be receptive that they don't necessarily have to go that route. So how many people have come to that form of cognitive dissonance in this event?
Yeah.
Two people going in there and coming out and the rain still coming is not going to crumble that. What will that lead to? Is it going to lead to religious wars? Or there a lot of things can happen because of the negligence of the Denobulans.
Yeah. I kind of see that now that you kind of lay it out. I kind of see it in two ways. It could be that she knows the truth and she's like, don't go do that, you know, mm-hmm. or it could be that we know that she came from a land that had been overrun already and she had sand in her lungs. It could have just been her faith was so crushed that she's like, I don't believe in that. You go do that. You want to sacrifice yourself. Yeah, I could definitely see it both ways.
Yeah, she may have seen somebody in her encampment who went inside to the tower, sacrificed themselves, and they still didn't get rain. Now, what does that do to you? You know, so now you move where you know it's some water because this is where this tower is. There's some water. But now, you know, I'm not going in there because there's a potential that we go in there. And we do all the things we're supposed to. We still don't get no water. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Breaking the prime directive. This is the age old thing we have in Star Trek. It's hard and fast rule, I guess. We break it when we need to. And I think Burnham makes the right decision here. And, you know, again, you have implications of what it's going to do to these people once they're gone. Do you reveal everything to these people to let them know what's going on? But I do think she made the right choice. Do you think, well, I think we know she did, but how much do we think Tilly influenced this choice? Was it merely, I'm not going to let Tilly die decision?
Mm. Yeah. That's almost precisely what I think it was. It was their friendship superseded. But then you can look at it as well as they've got this built-in excuse because the first episode was, we're putting you guys under the red directive.
Yes.
So now you're the Red Directive may supersede everything that we know about.
Exactly. See, I told you, you and I would agree. That is exactly where I was going. You know, forget the Prime Directive here. Does the Red Directive take precedent over that? And if you look at it from the perspective of, oh, well, knowledge given to one person of these people on this planet will break the Prime Directive. Well, if they don't solve this thing with this technology, then everybody might be wiped out.
Mm-hmm. Which goes back to one of my problems with this season. Why haven't they not completely laid out what the Red Directive is?
That's bothering me too.
Yeah, they've kind of told us what it is through their actions, but I guess I just want them to spell it out because, you know, when we had the Omega Directive, Janeway told us exactly what it is. Anytime they mention General Order 1, they always reassert what it actually is, what the Prime Directive is. So the fact that this has been kind of ambiguous the whole season, I mean, we know what it kind of means, but I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me.
It's on a need-to-know basis, and we don't need to know.
Go bitch!
It's above our pay grade.
Go ahead, Tasha.
So I like the Omega that you brought up, the Omega Directive, because not only was it spelled out. Now, if we were going to, and this is where I'm going to be Team Kyle all day, air day, because if we were going to spend an episode where we slowed everything down and spent time, you know, with exposition and character moments, we could have explained what this Red Directive was the exact same way Janeway did. Some people didn't understand what the Omega Directive was. She gave them a quick tutorial. In turn, we got the quick tutorial, and everybody is on the same footing. Right now, we're not on the equal footing as Kovich because we don't know what a freaking Red Directive is, you know?
Yeah. And Dreamwalker makes a comment here. I'll bring up. He says, what about the Omega Directive and the Temporal Prime Directive? Where do they fit in the hierarchy? Yeah, like, does one supersede the other? I would assume that the Red Directive supersedes everything, but we don't really know what it is. So,
okay, so I would say Omega Directive, because if you see that particle, you gotta destroy it.
Okay.
Then
my next thing
would be Red Directive. Then, no, my next thing would be Temporal Prime Directive, because if you don't, understand the Temporal Prime Directive, we'd be all over time trying to stop this stuff, you know, sticking one timeline. And then comes the Red Directive behind the Temporal Prime Directive. I don't know that for sure.
I think we're exactly the opposite on that one, which is fun. because I don't know what the Red Directive is exactly. Yeah, I don't know.
It's easy to try to put it someplace and it doesn't have a shape or a color. Well, it's red.
So according to Microsoft Copilot, it says the Red Directive takes Starfleet's classified missions to a new level, emphasizing extreme secrecy and critical importance. It's a fresh addition to the Star Trek canon, showcasing the evolving nature of Starfleet's operation in the series' future timeline.
That sounds neat to know to me.
Bingo.
We need to know.
Oh, let me go and pick up a few comments here. When Grace commented about the guy you was talking about, Tasha, the consultant, Jamaki Highwater claimed he was a Native American expert, but he was really Eastern European Jewish, which is crazy. His real name was Jackie Marks. What? What? And then Dreamwalker mentions that something like that happened with the Native American totem pole near Tacoma, too. Someone built a huge totem pole claiming it was a genuine Native American made totem pole, but it wasn't. Craziness. Craziness out here in these streets, man. Back on the episode, any other takeaways that we like to bring up as we kind of bring this thing to a close? The hell no people. I mean, the hell no people.
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to see. I think we talked about everything that was on my list.
Yeah. Of course, we get to the next part of the crew because Tilly sees the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. She recognizes one of the symbols that was also on the vial. Now, we do get that. I think I called it 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of flashing lights at the very beginning where they're looking at the vial. I went back. I could never find the mark on the vial. Maybe it's there. Maybe I just can't see it, but I couldn't see the mark. I tried to zoom in on the picture. I still can see it. But yeah, I think that was a pretty interesting way to get to the next part of the clue. And actually seeing Tilly touch those numbers, I think that was in the trailer as well, the early trailer. So that was kind of cool as well. We kind of circling back. And I thought it was a clever way to get to the next piece of the puzzle. And they go to the fifth tower to get the piece. So I thought that was really cool. And with that, guys, I guess since we're to the end of our notes, we can go ahead and start thinking about ratings. First, I'll say to the chat, what do you rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 5? Please let us know in the chat. We'll shout it out on this episode. But for the panel, Kyle Jones, how would you rate this episode, sir?
In the course of this particular season, not in the episode itself, I'm going to give it 3 Hellum No's out of 5.
Hellum No.
That's mine. 3 Hellum No's out of 5.
Can I just go with the Hellum No? Am I?
Go
no,
for
I
it.
Liked it. I liked it. Let me give this 3.75 Mafungos out of 5.
Well, I gave it higher than you guys, even though I had all those problems. I gave it a 4.75.
Oh, wow.
Hellum No's out of 5.
Wow. I'm way off. Jeez.
Well, no, oh, I'm way off. You guys are consistent with one another.
No, but honestly, we're usually higher on our rating. So let's see. 4.75. Oh, wow. That is crazy. Let's go to the chat and see what people have rated in there. Kyle, will you pick those up for us?
I absolutely will. So Marge is saying that she is giving 5 out of 5 water bowls. And very cleverly, when Grace says 4 out of 5 or 4 faulty towers out of 5. Very good nod to classic British comedy there. So sweet.
It's so funny because I do really like this episode. I guess I'm just trying to think of it, how it fits within the course of everything I've seen, because we've given some pretty high ratings already. So, and it's like, did you mention this up top, Kyle, that this is one that's probably going to age well?
Yes, I think it will. And if I look at it just in that context, I could easily give it somewhere in the 4s. I'm just looking at it from how I'm enjoying it from the series overall, from this storyline. And so that's why I'm a little bit lower. But yes, I do think it will age well.
And that's what I was thinking, where I agree with Kyle on, in this moment of the season, and we're waiting week to week for episodes, this feels like they hit the brakes.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, in a lot of ways, the slowdown and the character moments and the planet of the week and all that stuff is so great, but they hit the brakes and now our momentum is a little bit screwed up. But when we sit down later and watch this all together at once, like one long movie, we will appreciate this episode or this part of the long movie even better.
And I hope that's true. And when Grace goes on to say, this episode as a random watch works better than a piece of serialized puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even when you just look at the religious kind of questioning the religious aspects of these people, these Hellenese people in this episode. I definitely can come back to this one because it makes you ponder, and I think they did an excellent job with the writing in this episode as well. All right. Well, Kyle, did you have something, sir?
No, I was trying to be snarky and say, well, you know what the Southern Tower, you know, one of them that came, you know, went out, you know what those folks down there were called, right? The Hellum Nalls. You know, like Hell Nall. Cha-ching.
I'm dead. Oh, boy. Okay.
I left you speechless. My work is done.
Well, all right, then. All right, Kyle. With such quips as that, where can people find you as you talk about other things?
So if you like comedy and you like comedy fiction in a podcast form, you can check out Oz 9 Podcast. It is, of course, a comedy fiction sci-fi podcast at oz-9.com. And we are marching toward episode 100. And, of course, if you like Doctor Who, and who doesn't like Doctor Who, you can find Clarence and myself and our friend Lee Shackelford at discussingwho.com.
Tasha, where can people find you?
After the snappy movies and TV on YouTube, and then in all the other things, you can after the snap movies and TV, or just after the snap.
So I'm gonna give another plug to Tasha and say, if you are into Star Trek or X-Men, among other things, you should definitely drop by her live streams, to where she goes in depth on each of the new X-Men 97 episodes that have been coming out. So definitely give her a listen. And with that, guys, we're gonna wrap up. Thank you all for being here in the chat. We've really enjoyed your conversation. You have helped us, as always, push this episode along, so we really appreciate it. And until next time, guys, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that, like, shut up, Wesley? I can just go, shut up, Clarence?